Biden finally said her name. But he refused to take responsibility for his own actions. Mr. President, enough is enough. Innocent Americans are dying, and you only have yourself to blame. Fulfill your oath of office. Reverse your policies. End this crisis and stop the suffering. Sadly, we know that President Biden's failures don't stop there. His reckless spending dug our economy into a hole and sent the cost of living through the roof. We have the worst inflation in 40 years and the highest credit card debt in our nation's history. Let that sink in. Hardworking families are struggling to make ends meet today. And with soaring mortgage rates and sky-high childcare costs, they're also struggling to how to plan for tomorrow. The American people are scraping by while President Biden proudly proclaims that Bidenomics is working. Goodness, y'all, bless his heart, we know better. I'll never forget stopping at a gas station in Chilton County one evening. The gentleman working the counter told me that after retiring, he had to pick up a job in his 70s so that he didn't have to choose between going hungry or going without his medication. He said, I did everything right. I did everything I was told to do. I worked hard. I saved. I was responsible. He's not alone. I hear similar concerns from fellow parents, whether I am walking with my friends or whether I'm at my kids' games. But let's be honest, it's been a minute since Joe Biden pumped gas, ran a carpool, or even pushed a grocery cart. Meanwhile, the rest of us see our dollar and we know it doesn't go as far. We see it every day. And despite what he tells you, our communities are not safer. For years, the left has coddled criminals and defunded the police, all while letting repeat offenders walk free. The result is tragic, but foreseeable. From our small towns to America's most iconic city streets, life is getting more and more dangerous. And unfortunately, President Biden's weakness isn't just hurting families here at home. He is making us a punchline on the world stage. Look, where I'm from, your word is your bond. But for 3 years, the president has demonstrated that America's word doesn't mean what it used to. From abandoning our allies in his disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan to desperately pushing another dangerous deal with Iran, President Biden has failed. We've become a nation in retreat, and the enemies of freedom, they see an opportunity. Putin's brutal aggression in Europe has put our allies on the brink. Iran's terrorist proxies have slaughtered Israeli Jews and American citizens. They've targeted commercial shipping, and they've attacked our troops nearly 200 times since October, killing 3 U.S. soldiers and 2 Navy SEALs. Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party is undercutting America's workers. China is buying up our farmland, spying on our military installations, and spreading propaganda through the likes of TikTok. You see, the CCP knows that if it conquers the minds of our next generation, it conquers America. And what does President Biden do? Well, he bans TikTok for government employees, but creates an account for his own campaign. Y'all, you can't make this stuff up. Look, we all recall when presidents faced national security threats with strength and resolve. That seems like ancient history. Right now, our commander-in-chief is not in command. The free world deserves better than a dithering and diminished leader. America deserves leaders who recognize that secure borders, stable prices, safe streets, and a strong defense are actually the cornerstones of a great nation. Just ask yourself, are you better off now than you were 3 years ago? There's no doubt we're at a crossroads, and it doesn't have to be this way. We all feel it. But here's the good news. We, the people, are still in the driver's seat. We get to decide whether our future will grow brighter or whether we'll settle for an America in decline. Well, I know which choice our children deserve, and I know the choice the Republican Party is fighting for. We are the party of hard-working parents and families, and we want to give you and your children the opportunities to thrive. And we want families to grow. It's why we strongly support continued nationwide access to in vitro fertilization. We want to help loving moms and dads bring precious life into this world. Wesley and I believe there is no greater blessing in life than our children. And that's why tonight I want to make a direct appeal to the parents out there, and in particular to my fellow moms, many of whom I know will be up tossing and turning at 2 a.m., wondering how you're going to be in three places at once and then somehow still get dinner on the table. First of all, we see you, we hear you, and we stand with you. I know you're frustrated. I know you're probably disgusted by most of what you see going on in Washington, and I'll be really honest with you, you're not wrong for feeling that way. Look, I get it. The task in front of us isn't an easy one, but I can promise you one thing. It is worth it. So I am asking you, for the sake of your kids and your grandkids, get into the arena. Every generation has been called to do hard things. American greatness rests in the fact that we always answer that call. It's who we are. Never forget, we are steeped in the blood of patriots who overthrew the most powerful empire in the world. We walk in the footsteps of pioneers who tamed the wild. We now carry forward the same flame of freedom as the liberators of an oppressed Europe. We continue to draw courage from those who bent the moral arc of the universe. And when we gaze upon the heavens, never forget that our DNA contains the same ingenuity that put man on the moon. America has been tested before. And every single time, we've emerged unbowed and unbroken. Our history has been written with the grit of men and women who got knocked down. But we know their stories because they did not stay down. We are here because they stood back up. So now it's our turn, our moment to stand up and prove ourselves worthy of protecting the American dream. Together, we can reawaken the heroic spirit of a great nation. Because America, we don't just have a rendezvous with destiny. We take destiny's hand and we lead it. Our future starts around kitchen tables just like this, with moms and dads just like you. And you are why I believe with every fiber of my being that despite the current state of our union, our best days are still ahead. May God bless you, and may God continue to bless these United States of America.
All right, Senator Katie Britt from the U.S. state of Alabama giving the GOP response. Anita?
She certainly said it with feeling. She spoke very passionately about, first of all, the fears of the results of Biden's immigration policy. She spoke also about her concerns about Biden's status on the world stage. And throughout, she was very determined. I was a little surprised that her response to the IVF ruling contradicted the IVF ruling. And she said, we want to see families grow. We support families getting IVF access, which is what the court disagreed with. But she didn't mention anything else vis-a-vis reproductive rights.
The White House is already out with a response to what she just said, especially about her comments on the immigration issue in the border. A spokesman there, Andrew Bates, noting that last month, Senator Britt, according to him, cited against President Biden, the Border Patrol Union, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce by opposing the toughest bipartisan border deal in modern history, instead voting with fentanyl traffickers. That's the words of White House spokesperson Andrew Bates to what she just said.
It is kind of interesting. I was a little taken aback at times during the speech because I'm trying to understand which Republican Party they're actually representing in that speech, because a lot of what she said is essentially what President Biden said in his speech without, and some of the facts were a little loose.
But it's coming from a Republican woman talking to Republican and independent women. So I think that
it's
was the strategy.
It's coming from a Republican mom. She emphasized that. Yes. And it was notable that she chose to speak from a kitchen. I wondered if it was her kitchen. But that was, you know, her appeal to, I guess, the suburban mom demographic.
Which could determine the outcome of the election in November.
Well, and I think the contrast of age was significant as well.
Yes.
Particularly since we went into this thinking, how is President Biden going to perform because of his age? To see someone so young, even when you look at the chamber tonight of the congresspeople and the senators, you know, they are elderly people, and at 40, you know, they made a point to say at 40 years old, she's the youngest woman ever elected to the Senate in the Republican Party.
Right. 42 now.
Sure. I mean, she's demonstrating a contrast with Biden. I mean, I think she hit a lot of the points that the Republican Party wants to make, or rather that the Republican Party under Trump as the presumptive nominee wants to make. I would guess that Trump is pleased with this performance.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Yeah, I try not, like, I'm trying not to get into the head of Donald Trump, but I think he probably would be, because she hit a lot of points. She didn't mention him at all. She also didn't mention, I mean, it's interesting that neither Biden nor Britt mentioned Donald Trump by name.
Well, as we heard earlier today, she has not actually ever really endorsed Donald Trump, or, you know, it's a she's, you know, an arm's length from from that. We knew that going in. It could be a strategy, wouldn't you think?
Well, since Donald Trump is going to be the nominee and she is a Republican in Alabama, I think it's only a matter of time before she endorses Donald Trump.
Sure. All right. You know, I want to just go back over. Let's just do a big picture. President Biden and the response. President Biden came out of the gate with Ukraine, was very forceful about not just the support of Ukraine, but the fact that his opponent in the upcoming race, Donald Trump, said that if somebody was delinquent in their commitment to NATO, that in his opinion, Russia could do whatever they want, and thought that was atrocious that a U.S. president, a former U.S. president, would ever bow to a foreign power.
I think that was one of the strongest comments of the night from President Biden. It will get a lot of play on the networks in the coming days. It's interesting. The New York Times is characterizing President Biden's speech, saying he was feisty, that it was energetic and impassioned, and noting it was as much as a campaign kickoff as it was a State of the Union speech. And the president tomorrow is on the road immediately, a campaign event in Philadelphia,
He's going to Philadelphia, and then he's going to Georgia.
All right. You've been listening to live coverage of the State of the Union address and the GOP rebuttal. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. In Washington, D.C., I'm Scott Walterman, alongside Steve Herman and Anita Powell. Our producer is Tracy Carter. Thanks again for listening.
About whether there'll be a commitment from the major powers to actually fund this, you know, the SADC force, or whether even the UN would be interested in funding the SADC force. Plus, we cannot also count out this question about public opinion in South Africa around these SADC forces. You know, how will South Africans feel when more and more of their troops start dying in the DRC? Remember, it's an election year this year in South Africa, and I think this question will be high on the table in terms of foreign policy, particularly given that South Africa itself is really going through a very difficult economic situation now. Many citizens in South Africa will be questioning, why are we spending so much on troops in DRC when we have all these economic problems at home? So it's really a very multifaceted picture in terms of thinking whether SADC will succeed or not. But I'm skeptical about the chances of SADC succeeding where so many others have failed, particularly even with the UN with a much bigger force than what SADC has right now.
That was political analyst David Monda speaking with us from New York. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impugo in Washington. Today's Friday, March 8th. Still to come on our program, Samson Omalley Sports. In South Africa, law enforcement agencies are investigating 300,000 cases of fraudulent visas and resident permits being issued. As many as 45,000 of them were issued to Chinese nationals. News of the investigation has caused a public outcry in a country with the highest official unemployment rate in the world. Darren Taylor reports.
A report from several South African government agencies says a network of corrupt immigration officials illegally issued thousands of Chinese citizens' visas, residence permits, and even South African identity documents. This opened the door for the Chinese citizens to work in a variety of companies trading with China, and for the allegedly illegal migrants to themselves establish businesses. Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi tells VOA the first offences began at least 7 years ago, and the investigation is going to be long and complicated.
It needs forensic analytics, it needs lawyers, it needs all sorts of people, forensic investigators, and even senior counsels. Some people might need to be arrested, others might be deported, some who have been sitting comfortably with South African documents and citizenship, they might have to be deprived of those documents because they were quite fraudulent.
Motsoaledi says it's pretty obvious why thousands of Chinese citizens chose South Africa as a base.
Some of them find it easier to establish businesses here for whatever reason. But we know, and unfortunately, their ambassador did not like this when I said it before. They also love establishing businesses where they exploit illegal labor. They are not the only ones. We are talking of only Chinese. I think that report has unveiled many other nationalities from all over the world that are doing this. It's only that with the Chinese, they found that very large number, maybe because their population is very big. But I can only conclude that they are looking for business opportunities, which might not flourish back home in China, but will flourish here in South Africa.
Some immigration experts say some Chinese business people have for years hired South African workers illegally because their businesses lack proper registration. They also fail to register the workers as required by labor laws. That allows the Chinese employers to pay extremely low wages and not to provide the workers with basic benefits such as sick leave. The Chinese embassy in Pretoria did not respond to requests for comment. But South Africa's Chinese Business Association said it's actively encouraging all Chinese business people to comply with the law. The association also pointed out the charity work it does, including supplying food parcels to the poor and generators for aged people struggling with the country's power outages. Investigators provided VOA with footage showing the Chinese owner of a textile factory in Johannesburg who couldn't provide documents to prove his business was legitimate. In the video, when the investigator questioned him about his labor practices, the man refused to answer. The investigators say workers showed them a demolished building in which they were living. The laborers had built cave-like structures out of bricks for shelter. In the video, the owner did not answer when the investigator asked why there wasn't adequate shelter, then walked into his own home. Motsoaledi says he's already taken action against immigration officials who sold false documents to Chinese nationals, and more severe punishment would follow after an investigation by South Africa's Hawks specialized police agency.
27 charge sheets have already been finalized. 5 disciplinary hearings have commenced, 12 disciplinary matters have been concluded, 9 officials have been dismissed, others have been handed over to the Hawks, they are still investigating. 2 officials have actually resigned, 1 official dismissal is subject to an appeal.
South Africa's International Relations Department also declined to comment on whether the affair would cause diplomatic tensions with Beijing. The Chinese Communist Party historically has had close ties with South Africa's governing African National Congress. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Senegalese presidential candidates faced a shortened race to Election Day on Thursday after the Constitutional Council confirmed the delayed vote would be held on March 24th, kick-starting a competition that remains wide open. Reuters reports uncertainty over the date of the vote has gripped the West African country since early February, when the authorities thwarted bid to postpone the February 25th poll by 10 months, provoked widespread protests and warnings of democratic backsliding. Many hope the worst of the crisis is over after the council ruled on Wednesday that the vote must be held before President Macky Sall's mandate expires on April 2nd, prompting him to schedule it for March 24th, a date the top court has now approved. The new date leaves the 19 candidates little more than 2 weeks to canvass support. It also means for the first time, campaigning will take place during the holy month of Ramadan, when many in the Muslim-majority country fast. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport in Ghana, where the 13th edition of the All Africa Games, Africa's version of the Olympics, will get underway on Friday. The four-year multi-sport event runs from the 8th to the 23rd of March, organized by the African Union, the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, the Association of African Sports Confederations, and the Supreme Council for Sports in Africa. The 13th African Games is expected to attract over 13,000 participants, including officials, athletes, media, and volunteers from 54 African countries. Ghana's Minister of Youth and Sports, Mustafa Usif, told journalists ahead of the Games that Ghana is ready to deliver one of the most organized events in the Games' history.
We are going to accommodate our athletes. We are expecting 13,000 participants. Most of the athletes will be housed at the Games Village.
And now to tennis, where tennis world number 6, Hans Jabeur of Tunisia, will take on world number 131, U.S. Katie Volnitz, on Friday as part of the Indian Wells Open. The Tunisian has made a slow start to the season so far, chalking up 2 wins from 5 matches and a quarterfinal appearance at the Abu Dhabi Open. She also reached the second round of the Australian Open 2024. Friday's game will mark Jabeur's return after withdrawing from the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships last February due to a knee injury. The World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, has suspended the accreditation of South Africa's Bloemfontein Anti-Doping Laboratory, the only accredited laboratory in Africa, for multiple non-conformities with international standards. In a statement, WADA said it had suspended the accreditation of the South African Anti-Doping Laboratory in Bloemfontein for 6 months. The Bloemfontein Laboratory had already been placed under some restrictions in September last year, while other anti-doping activities were allowed to continue. And now to basketball. The Basketball Africa League, BAL, is set to kick off its expanded fourth season in South Africa. The 2024 BAL season will tip off on Saturday, 9th of March 2024 at the Sunbet Arena in Pretoria, marking the first time BAL games will be played in the country. The 2024 BAL season will feature the top 12 club teams from 12 African countries playing a record 48 matches. Cape Town Tigers small forward Samakelo Sile is fired up for the first BAL game this weekend on home soil.
It's going to be great, you know what I mean, because we're going to have a different sense of motivation having to play and having to display a high level of basketball here at home, you know what I mean. And so, it was good playing in Egypt, but like playing here at home, It's no other. I feel great. I feel excited. I'm ready for sure.
The official draw of the CAF Futsal AFCON Morocco 2024 tournament was officially conducted on Thursday at the Mohammed VI complex in Rabat, where 8 nations were drawn into 2 groups of 4 each to contest the 7th edition of the competition. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Friday, March 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for joining us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.